For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy? All right, we're done.
That was so good, man.
Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9. We're here in Las Vegas for Dumb Intersection. How you doing, bud?
Doing great.
This is Rob Eisenberg, if you don't know him. What do you do, my friend?
I am the CEO of Durandal Inc. and the lead designer of Aurelia.
Awesome. So we've already looked at some other JavaScript frameworks. I thought we'd have you on to sort of explain the history of Aurelia, whatever you'd like to tell us about, and maybe even show us what's cool about Aurelia and why devs should look at it for spa type applications.
Absolutely, I'd love to.
All right, so tell us the history.
So Aurelia, believe it or not, actually goes back about 10 years.
Wow.
Really, it's a story of my passion for making front-end development easier.
Mm-hmm.
And about 10 years ago, I was looking into the betas of WPF and just the cool stuff that was happening there. And there was amazing technology, but it felt too hard to do certain things. And I wanted to help developers to be able to build apps that were more easily testable, maintainable, extensible,
sure.
All these positive qualities that we want in our code. And so I started to build something like called Caliburn.
Yeah, of course, if you know anything about MVVM, one of the earliest, if I remember right, one of the earliest MVVM frameworks.
Yes, so I actually started work on that in the beta days of WPF when I was playing around and building some of my own private apps that I was working on to learn things. And that evolved over the years and was used in a bunch of stuff and eventually became Caliburn Micro, which was a smaller, more focused version of that. And then around Mix, it was Mix 10, I showed what was kind of the going to become Caliburn Micro in a talk called Build Your Own MVVM Framework. And I was talking with some people after that, and they said, wouldn't it be cool if you could do this in HTML? And I thought, that is an interesting idea.
I remember having a similar idea. Obviously, we all have like, man, wouldn't it be nice if... But you said, wouldn't it be nice if, and then you went to the next step.
Right, yeah. And so Steve Sanderson was releasing Knockout pretty soon around that time, I think. And I said, this is a fantastic infrastructure piece. Can I put this together with some other things? And then, so I did that, and that became Durandal.
Of course.
And which is a single page app framework. And so that was kind of, I make these connections because in my head, I started back in the WPF days, but I was trying to find the way to solve the same problems, and I was trying to take my learning and the patterns and practices and shift them across platforms.
Sure.
So that was kind of a shift into the web, but it carried with it a lot of the concepts from Caliburn Micro that have been developed in the XAML world. And so from there, basically last year, Google took some interest in what I was doing because I was starting to work on a next generation version of Durandal, and they were getting ready to work on Angular 2. And they said, why don't you come join us? Maybe we can join forces and you can help us do that. So I went to work with them as a full-time consultant to the team, being hired to be a designer and implementer of Angular 2 and to provide a sort of outside source of a perspective and feedback. And so I worked with them for about 10 months, and in the beginning of the project, we looked to be pretty unified. But as time went on, really my vision for the next generation of web app development and theirs began to increasingly diverge.
Okay.
And really, I saw them going in a different direction than everything that I had been learning over the last 10 years, and the direction that was pointing me in. So eventually, that those set of differences. Stacked up enough to where it was just prudent for me to leave.
Yeah.
And so I did that in November of last year, November of last year, and then I immediately set to work on Aurelia, which is really the next generation version of Durandal. So I kind of picked up where I had left off from before that project and started to implement that. And then this year in February, we announced the first alpha of Aurelia, and we also kind of announced the team, and so we have an 18-person team.
18.
That's
awesome.
We part of my vision was to really also not just solve some technical problem, but to solve some very real business problems around JavaScript. So we wanted to make sure that we could have a a powerful technical solution, but we also wanted to make sure that we had a strong team that could support it over a number of years. We wanted to make sure that we had a company that could provide real commercial support for organizations that want to build on it. Because one of the problems that we kept hearing was, oh, you know, we're going to spend X million dollars building apps in our companies on top of a these various JavaScript frameworks that are out there. And yet there's no guarantees.
Yeah, that the person working on it is ever going to be there.
Or that they're going to work on it, that there's any guarantee of a term of life. Can I get any kind of commercial support? Can I get priority bug fixes? All these sort of things, which, you know, if you're working on Microsoft stack, you come to take for granted because it's just part of the way Microsoft does business. And I remember Scott Hanselman in the keynote the other day was talking about Microsoft is saying open source. But when we release, it is still an official Microsoft product, and it comes with all those things that go with it. And when I looked at the JavaScript world, we saw all this open source, but we didn't really see this notion of, well, this framework is an official product, and it comes with all these pieces. So we wanted to solve that problem, too. So in February, we announced the alpha. We announced that we had this company that we were working on solving those kind of problems. We announced that we had the core team. And then we've just been iterating on it over this year. And it's been a fantastic journey because we've seen an extremely rapid uptake. Sure. The community is growing in amazing ways. We've had we have over 220 contributors since we launched in February. We get about 20 or so new contributors every month. And we have people that have put apps in production already. We've kind of told them to hold off on that because we're still in alpha. But some of the members of the community that are very savvy and experienced in this area have felt comfortable doing that, and they've had success and been happy.
Awesome.
And so we've seen adoption by everything from within very large enterprises. I can't give names, but you would know some of these, and down to just the one-man shop. So across the board and across many industries, healthcare and insurance and gaming and line of business apps and all sorts of things. So the months since we released that have been a really fantastic journey of seeing fantastic, you know, just adoption, great community response, and we've continued to evolve the framework, hardening it in terms of fixing bugs, better improving performance, and really just interacting with the community as much as possible to make sure that we have the feature set that really addresses the real world problems, which is I think what makes Aurelia very unique is, you know, all of our team, everyone on our team actually uses Aurelia as part of their day job.
Oh.
And so everyone that's working on the framework is also forced to use the framework.
Right.
And so we know very quickly when there's a pain point or where something's not hard, not easy or even impossible, we can then come back and address that issue and work with the other community members that have found those things. And so we're very connected in that way, and even myself. And I do consulting as well, so I'm the architect of Aurelia, if you will, but I use Aurelia every day, so I'm always connected with that.
Yeah.
And that's really important to me, and I think that's really important to building something like that. So it's been a fantastic journey to get where we are now, and I don't know when this will air, but we're hoping to get the beta out in the next week or so.
Oh, so you'll probably be out by then.
Yeah, and that'll be fantastic. We'll have a new set of documentation, some new getting started guides, and of course we'll have a bunch of new features and
awesome.
A lot of stuff like that.
So to ask you this question, you've had almost a decade's worth of MVVM sort of experience. What are some of those nuggets that you've learned over the years that you felt needed to go into Aurelia that weren't really anywhere else?
Well, the one of the most important things is this notion of, from the .NET land, it would be called POCOs, or from in JavaScript, you might call them POJOs. The idea of, can I build my app and my components as with plain code, plain old JavaScript code, minimal framework intrusion. So if you want to create code that is easy to evolve over time, is easy to maintain and extend, you don't want some external framework infesting your business logic, your code, and all your components. You want to keep things as simple as possible and as clean as possible. And you know, we worked really hard on that with Calibre Micro, and Durandal was to that effect as well, and that's carried over into Aurelia. If you look out at all the JavaScript frameworks out there, there's not a single one besides Aurelia that lets you build components with just plain JavaScript.
I see.
I don't know, can we do a demo of that?
Yeah, let's do it. I want to see it.
It's super simple. So I have a number of demos right here, but I thought we'll just start with a Hello World type example.
Yeah, let's do it.
And so when you create a component with Aurelia, your component has two parts to it. It has the JavaScript part, which is a class. So we're doing everything with ECMAScript 2015, so we're very much about modern JavaScript.
Sure.
And so when you write a component, the first thing you do is you will write a class. And you can see this is just a plain class. You don't see any special API calls. You don't see any importing of Aurelia libraries.
Yeah, there's nothing around it.
You just see a plain ECMAScript 2015 class. It's an exported class. It's got some constructor, some properties. Mm-hmm. It's got a computed property of full name, but it's pure JavaScript.
Sure.
And so in Aurelia, you start by writing a class, and then that has your state and your behavior for your component. And then you also write a view and an HTML file, and you name them the same. So if this is hello.js, then we'll have hello.html. And inside of that, you'll have a template tag, and that's coming from the web component specification. So this is actually a standard. All our views are built on top of standards-based templates.
So it looks like you're not trying to be intrusive either on the code side or the markup side.
We're trying to be as clean as possible. The only thing where you see Aurelia is you'll see these expressions, these binding expressions, and you can always tell them by the dot. So
yeah,
we can actually enable data binding to any property in the class by simply saying dot bind, and you can put that on any attribute in HTML.
I see. So if like the SRC of an anchor tag, you do dot bind,
yep,
and then okay, makes sense.
And you're done. We can also do interpolation straight into the content of a tag. So right there, we're bringing the full name into the H3. And that syntax that we've used there with the dollar sign and the two curly braces is the same syntax as ECMAScript 2015, which has string interpolation or string templating in the language. So what we tried to do is also, where appropriate, take the concepts from JavaScript and use the same syntax in HTML so the developers don't have to learn anything new. They don't have to make a mental shift.
I see. That's interesting.
And so what this does is this takes our value attribute of our input and data binds it to first name, and then this one is bound to last name. And so dot bind does something we call two-way data bind, or default data binding. And so based off of what you're binding, it will try and be smart. When you're data binding an input or a select or a text area, something where the user is going to interact and type things in and whatnot, it uses two-way data binding. But if for everything else, it pretty much uses one-way data binding, which means the data will only flow from your JavaScript code into HTML.
That, yeah.
And you can always take control of this. So you can, if you want to say two-way explicitly, you can just say two-way.
I see.
Or one-way or one time, in which case there's no synchronization that happens. It just grabs the original value and places it in there and then doesn't keep it synced.
That's clever, because I think one of the problems that people find is that if you have two-way binding and multiple components together, two-way binding in a circular fashion, you
yep,
just hosed your application. And so that one time is kind of nice.
Exactly.
And ensure that that's never going to happen.
And dot bind tries to do what is 90% of the time what you would want, but you always have the control to change that. So basically, this is a component in Aurelia, and I'll show it to you rendering. But as you can see, we're talking about what no other framework can do. This is just plain JavaScript. And then we have HTML that's a standard-based template, but with a very simple data binding language. And then if I bring up the browser, you'll see there's my two text box, they're data bound, there's the full name down here, and as I type in that, everything updates, the computer
nice
property and everything like that. But we try and keep things very clean and very simple, and this is, you know, 50 or 60% of the data binding language you've now learned. There's some other things like repeaters and ifs.
Of course.
But the patterns are the same. And what's really cool about this is that components are components in Aurelia. So if I want to now use this as a custom element, so this is basically one component that's my whole app right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can come in here, though, and I can say, hello. Oops. And I can actually take the component that I just wrote, and now it's a custom element automatically. I don't have to make any changes to the code. Now, I don't want to render this yet because it will be recursive.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put an input type checkbox in here, and I'm going to use another type of binding we have, which is called reference binding. So I can give this a name, call it recursive, and then down here, I want to only render this hello component if recursive is checked. Okay. So now I'm binding elements together there by giving the input a reference name. I can now data bind anything to it. And the checked property is the native check property of the element. So now the same component that we're in, this hello component, we've now, without changing any code, we can use it as a custom HTML element. And of course, I'm even recursively in this fashion. So, oops, I just did what I did not want to do. Let's come back over here, and now you can see, oops, I think I've got a typo on my code.
That's never happened to anyone writing JavaScript.
Let me just make sure I spelled everything correctly. Input, oh, type needs to be checkbox. So now you come over here and you see the checkbox, and as I click it, it now, the custom element renders again and again and again and again.
If we look
in the DOM, and this is a bit small, so let me make it a little bit bigger for you. If we look in the DOM, you'll see that there's that custom element, hello, right there, rendering with its view, and inside of that, it's rendering another one, and so on and so forth. And so the way that you create an app is the same way you create a custom element, and it's the same way that you create a modal dialog box, right. And it's the same way you do dynamic composition. Let me show you this. Suppose you don't know at runtime what component you want to render there. It's data-driven, maybe.
Okay.
There's some type or some value. You can use a special element we have called compose, and instead, and this is where you're going to see the MVVM, there's a view model property, and we can take this view model property, oops, we can take this, sorry, I'm typing the wrong thing. We can take this view model property, and we can point it at a file path of the module. So we can say hello. And now dynamically, it's going to bring the same component in as well. If I come back over here, you'll see that it renders the same way. But now it's dynamically composing. Now this isn't really amazing in this example because I'm still statically putting that value in there. But we've got data binding. So we could bind this to some property on the model and based on the value of that property, compose in real time different components in.
So you might have a scenario where, like even with tab, you can do some really cool things with tabbing. You can do some really cool things with like, based on particular user type.
Exactly.
You can change everything.
Imagine you have a heterogeneous list of users, and some are they're all employees, but some of them are managers or something,
sure.
And you want to loop over them, and you want to render different components based off of the type.
Sure.
It's just one line of code. You use compose and you just tell it what to do and you're done.
This is cool. One of the things I'm liking about this is that it doesn't feel intrusive, but only when it has to be.
Exactly. And that's kind of our philosophy. We want to get out of your way. And if you do things in certain ways, in which we think are very sensible ways, then you'll not even see the framework most of the time.
Sure.
But you always have the ability to go in and override stuff or to customize this or to do more advanced things where you can incrementally kind of engage the framework, if you will, to do other things.
So this makes sense to me when it comes to this particular view. But how, for example, do you start the whole process of like getting this thing to render?
Right. Yeah. So once you've kind of downloaded our starter kit and got that set up, the first place you want to look is in index.html. You know, this is your single page, if you will.
Sure.
And in this example, I've just got some Bootstrap, which is not needed. It just makes things look a little bit
better.
Yeah. But what you do is first you include something called System.js, and this is a module loader. It's based off of the ECMAScript 2015 standard.
Okay.
So there's actually a now specification for how modules will be loaded. And it's actually a very generic resource loader. You can load more than just JavaScript with it. You can anything with it. So System.js is an implementation of that. So you put the standard-based loader in there, and then you bring in this config file, which is generated by the tooling that we normally use. I won't go into too much detail of that. But what the config file does is it's very much like if you are familiar with sort of like the modern ASP.NET stuff, where you have a JSON file that lists the dependencies and
that
kind of points to where they're at. That's what the config.js does for JavaScript. So the loader says, oh, you're looking for jQuery. Well, it's actually over here.
Yeah,
go load it from there. So you include the loader and then its configuration. And then once you do that, you just use the standard loader API to bootstrap or start up the app. And so you just say import, or really a bootstrapper, and the system import is a standards-based API mm-hmm. for the loader. And so we're dynamically importing our component from Aurelia, which is the bootstrapper. And what it does is it's in charge of setting the framework up, getting everything rolling, and starting the initial rendering. And one of the things it does, it can do it in several different ways, but one of the things it does is it'll look for an Aurelia app attribute somewhere in the DOM. So it can say, oh, you've identified that the body is the location where the app will render. And so it's going to look in there and it's going to see main, and it's going to use that to go load this main.js file, which is the way that you can configure the startup of the framework.
Got it.
And so you just export a simple configure function. It's going to give you the Aurelia instance, and in this case, it's really simple to use the default. So we just say, all right, Aurelia, use a standard configuration, mm-hmm. and we want development logging so we can see what's happening. And then you tell the framework to start, and once it's done that, you tell it to set root, and this is what we call our root component. If you were doing Windows development, this would be like your main window.
Yeah, main window.
If you were doing like an MVC type stuff, this would be like your main layout or something like that. So it's really your root component. And you just point that at a module, and it understands this pattern of, oh, there's going to be this module with this class, and there's going to be this view. I'm going to go fetch them both. I'm going to parse and instantiate the template, instantiate the class, data bind them together, stick it in the DOM, and render it.
And then you're going to do that recursively for all the children inside.
It can do that recursively, yep. And then you can use Compose. We also have a router. I won't show that now, but you can do client-side routing. And the thing is that the way you create components for all the different scenarios is the same. You don't do anything different. You just create a class and a view, and a class and a view. Whether you're working with the router, whether it's your root component, whether it's custom elements. And we try and follow these very simple patterns. Now, I always say it's simple, but it's not simplistic. So. Mm-hmm. It means that you can build extremely large-scale, very complex applications, but you don't have to have a very complex way of solving those problems.
I see.
So we want to have these simple patterns so that you can focus on what it is that I am building. You know, what's the business case? What's my app? What are my features? Not, okay, how am I going to, call framework APIs and do that kind of a thing.
So let's get into... You said you want to defer navigation, but let's talk about navigation in general. How do you navigate throughout the app? I noticed that little checkbox you did was kind of like a semi-navigation mm-hmm. that did recursive, but is there routing that happens?
There is. On your root component, you can actually implement a method called configure router.
Okay.
And the framework will give you a router, and you can set up routes. And it's very much the same way you might do in any server-side MVC. You do is you map a route pattern to a module or mm-hmm. to a component.
Right.
And so whenever the client-side router matches that pattern in the location, it'll load up the component, follow the same procedure that we already used, and
that's awesome.
And put it in the DOM. And you can say where to put it in the DOM. We have an element called the router view. Mm-hmm. And you put this custom element inside your view wherever you want the current page to render. Mm-hmm. And you can actually do this recursively as well, the same way I did it with Compose. So you can have a component that is routed to, but then that component can have its own router.
Oh, I see.
And it can have child routes that are relative to the parent route, and it can render those into its own view. And so you can even fully encapsulate whole feature areas of your app. And this is really important for large-scale development. So you're building a large app, and maybe you have multiple teams, and you want to basically let that team work on their feature in isolation in a way that won't affect everyone else. Well, they can effectively work as if they have their own router instance and their own components and build everything that way, and then you just drop that in.
Oh, it's like really their own like sub-application.
Exactly.
And then that just gets lifted in.
And it can even be run as an application or hosted inside of
another
application, because the router is the same. They just, all the patterns are the same. It just happens at runtime, if they're the root component, they get the app router. If they're a child component, then they get basically a child router.
Sure.
But it's polymorphic. They don't need to know what's what. The APIs are the same.
That's awesome.
And it just works.
So the next question then becomes this. When you are writing these things, obviously not all browsers have support for ES6.
Mm-hmm.
But System.js sort of overcomes that, but there is a limitation in that you're doing some parsing on the client side. Is there a way to do like some grunt slash gulp type things in order to make Aurelia be a little bit slimmer?
Absolutely. So what happens is usually when you get set up to build a production app, we have our skeleton or our starter kit that we get you set up with. And inside of there, we have a bunch of gulp tasks that we've pre-configured for you to do all sorts of stuff that you would want. And one of them is transpiling your ES6 code into ES5. So that's all done ahead of time.
Is that with Babel or what are you using?
We use Babel, but we also, people in our community are using TypeScript a lot too.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of swapping that one task out.
So I was gonna ask that. So you can totally just write it all in TypeScript and then swap the gulp task to transpile over to ES5.
Absolutely, and we have a lot of people using TypeScript successfully. All of Aurelia ships with DTS files for TypeScript, so
wonderful.
That's full IntelliSense on that.
And that's the type definition so that you can get good IntelliSense.
Like absolutely.
That's awesome. So where do you see the future of Aurelia? It seems like you're really trying hard to get out of the way of what already is there. When you do have to get in the way, you're going to do it in an idiomatic way, because I'm seeing like the API, you're being very idiomatic about the calls.
Right.
What are some other things in Aurelia that people should really look out for that is really better than some of the other frameworks?
Let me show you. I've got some fun demos here.
All right, let's see it.
Let me just hook up a demo to show you a slightly different demo. So I'm gonna set a different root component. And I wanna show you how we can build components with only HTML and no JavaScript at all.
And before we get there, this is interesting in that on the fly, you're changing the entire root of the application without having to do much of anything. You're saying, okay, now let's go here.
Yep.
Okay, that's
absolutely
cool.
And we do have people that actually do that based off of this can all be asynchronous as well, the startup,
because
the config can return a promise. So people will even say, oh, based off of the user that's logged in, we're going to actually give them a different version of the app.
Holy cow. And not only the different version of the app, but maybe you work in a large shop, right? And in this shop, you have the people that are the servers in front that need to do some stuff there. You have the cooks in the back. It's all the same application, but they're really just loading different folders or areas that they
exactly.
need to
load. Exactly. Okay. Can do all kinds of things. So I want to show you another demo, and this is going to look the same. The component-based component is going to be our same, very similar class that we have with just a first and a last name. And over here, I'm going to have HTML, but before we had our tags bound to first name, and then we were just rendering the full name in line. But what I really would like to have maybe is a different rendering. Instead of just text rendering of the name, I want to have a more visual rendering that looks like a name tag. You know, the typical, hello, my name is
absolutely.
Rob or John or whatever it is. And so in this case, I have a custom element called name tag that I'm using to render that name tag. And let me just show you what this looks like before we dig into the details. So if I can come over here, you can see that that name tag is rendering as this right here. And you can see that the name is rendering into the body of that content. So what's unique about this scenario is that this is a custom element that doesn't really have any advanced behavior to it.
No,
it's just a view that we want to reuse over and over again.
It's like HTML and CSS pretty much.
Exactly. And so in that case, we can actually build these custom elements without writing any JavaScript when you have that kind of scenario. And first we import them into a view. So an important aspect of Aurelia is that views are encapsulated. So there's no globals. So you decide what elements and behaviors you want to function in a particular view. So we use that with this require element, which is part of our framework. It's very much like importing in JavaScript with ES6. This is the equivalent for our views. So we're saying we want to basically import or require this name tag HTML file. And what we can do is we can transform any HTML file into a custom element automatically.
And that's what you were doing before, but now you're saying that really any custom template from HTML, you can make that into its own tag, but it doesn't need the actual code, the class behind it.
It doesn't. Not if there's no interesting behavior you would need to code up. If it's purely a view, you can do that. And if you see here, we've got just basic HTML, and you use a content tag. This is borrowing from the Shadow DOM web specification. That tells us where you want to render the content of your custom tag. So if you can see over here, inside of the name tag, I have this first name, and so that's projecting it into this location inside of my custom rendering.
And you could even like put an H1 tag in there and then do the string interpolation, and then it would just render whatever's in there.
Yep, exactly.
This is very reminiscent of like master pages in MVC type behavior.
Yep. And you can see that each component can even have its own CSS, so we can require in the CSS for this individual component. That'll get hooked up. And we can even declare properties that are bindable. So notice that this name tag has this color property, which we're binding. And I've just described that right here by saying it's got a bindable color. And then that color is going to affect the CSS, the background. So if I come over here now, and I come up here and I type blue,
that's cool.
The whole thing changes. So even if the template itself needs to be data-driven by parameterized with various bindable properties and content, you still don't need to be worrying about writing JavaScript. So you can still just write it in pure HTML. It just becomes a very rich template that can then function as a custom element. You only need to bring the JavaScript in when, you know, this needs to take on some interesting behavior that's different. And this actually covers a lot of scenarios and makes it really simple.
Yeah, it really does. So now the next question is, these scenarios are really awesome, but what happens when you need to bubble up events that would sort of affect other components?
Yeah, so what we usually defer to in that is using standard DOM events. A lot of people don't realize that with the DOM, you can actually create custom events and dispatch them from any element. And so if you're creating a custom component, that would be the way you would handle it if your component needs to raise events. But we also have another mechanism, and I don't have a demo for that right now, but we have another mechanism for cross-component communication.
I see.
And we call this the event aggregator, and it's a service that basically gives you pub/sub capabilities in the client.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so whenever you have, especially if you're doing highly componentized apps, you maybe have different teams that are working on things, and you want them to be decoupled, the feature areas to be decoupled, but this feature needs to know when certain things happen over here, mm-hmm. you can use this event aggregator to very loosely publish and subscribe to what I would call application level events or business events that happen on the client side. So we have those two different mechanisms. Really, if you're thinking about DOM and UI level events, you would just use standard DOM APIs to publish custom events. And we have polyfills to make sure that works in every browser. That's automatic. But if you're thinking in terms of business or application level events, you would use our event aggregator and do pub sub that way for loosely coupled communication.
Like for example, when I click a button on this really tiny component that says delete account,
yep.
that's an important business thing that just happened.
Absolutely.
And you use pub sub to say this account's deleted, this component needs to do certain work, this component needs to, and then you do that as well.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
So what else am I missing? I feel like I've gone through, because I was going to ask about structure of the actual application, but given the way that you set the root element, you can really structure this however you want.
Exactly. Usually I recommend people structure their apps based off of features of the app.
I've heard
that a lot. Create a folder for each feature and keep everything for that feature together. You have a lot of flexibility and power. If we have a few minutes, I'd love to show you a couple of kind of extensibility, flexibility things. In that demo we just did, I showed creating custom components from HTML. But what if you could turn any markdown file into a custom element?
That would be super cool.
Okay, so let me just show you another demo here. And I call this the view pipeline demo because and again, I'm just going to set up another app here. HTML, those requires that you saw in the views, you can actually plug into that and teach it how to interpret different resources and do things.
Sure.
What we're about to do is metaprogramming, basically, of custom elements. And here I'm just, we talked about features and apps being built out of features. Well, that concept of feature-driven development is actually part of the framework, and I'm actually utilizing right here because I've got some functionality I've dropped in. But let me show you the same class that we had before. And now let me show you the HTML. And I've got this hello tag again. And this is a little bit different. I've got first name and last name and whatnot. But notice I'm now requiring a markdown file.
And that's the markdown file that represents this hello tag.
Exactly. And there it is. Now I'm still using that content in place because now we're going to actually render markdown. But the content of the tag is going to be rendered into the middle
of
the markdown.
Awesome.
And if we come over here and we look at this, assuming I saved everything, you'll now see there's that markdown file being rendered, and there's the content being rendered into the middle of the markdown.
That's cool.
Now, this is not something that's out of the box with Aurelia, you know, rendering markdown as custom elements. But Aurelia is actually extensible enough that you can plug it in. And so what we actually have here is, I don't want to go into too much detail of the code, but we have a view engine service that's part of Aurelia, and what you can actually do is say, hey, I want to add a resource plugin that matches the file type of markdown files. Mm-hmm. And so anytime somebody imports a markdown file into a view, I'm going to have an opportunity to interpret that on the fly. And what this does is it basically generates, I'm using a third-party markdown library, but it basically generates a custom element dynamically, generates its view dynamically. You see there it's creating a template out of the markdown and everything, and then it returns it, and then it's cached by the system. So whenever that markdown file is referenced anywhere, there's a custom element now that represents it. So this is, you can see, it's only 40 lines of JavaScript, and I was able to actually extend Aurelia to teach it this new kind of metaprogramming concept around elements. Now, anytime we see a markdown file imported, we have a custom element we can use to render that.
That's awesome. Can we go back? I have a couple of questions. Let's go to the app.html.
Absolutely.
So I understand the require because we did this before with regular HTML. We put the hello tag, first name, last name. What I'm sort of not understanding is how is this intercepted to know, like I think it's in the app.js maybe?
Are you talking about when I configured
everything? Yes, there you go.
Yeah, so in this feature upload, basically that comes out to this resources folder and this index folder, and it runs this configure method. And that is when we're actually configuring the framework to extend it with this new concept of markdown-based components.
I see. So you might be able, is it just looking for the index file? Because I know you just put a...
Yes, that's part of the way features work. It's a kind of a simple convention for organizing features.
So you might have a number of things that you might want to do feature-wise. For example, markdown. Is there an example of another feature that you could add that's different?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you could do all kinds of things. In fact, this is a way that any kind of third-party custom components would be implemented, very similar. Like if you wanted to create a library of reusable custom elements, you would do that as a feature, and you give it an index that configures those components with the framework, and then all the person has to do is, in their app configuration, import that plugin or feature.
Interesting.
And it just hooks it all up and works.
So like if you have some particular, say you're using Highcharts, for example, mm-hmm. and you want to always, and you'll be able to bind into it as well, and you have this component, and in the resources you say, here's how you set up the Highchart, and here's the data it takes, and then you just sort of reuse it all over the place.
Exactly.
That's super cool. Well, what else you got, man? I don't even know what questions to ask anymore, because I think I've already covered like how I would get started, but it seems like you always have another extra thing.
Let me take it up one more notch.
Let's do it.
So on the theme of extensibility, this is one thing that all these demos that I'm showing you are stuff that no other framework can do.
Of course.
And one of the reasons that it really is so powerful is because of its extensibility model. Like you could plug in that into that view resource pipeline and teach it how to
do anything.
Do anything. And there's all sorts of hooks around views, all sorts of things that you can connect into that pipeline. One of the things you can do is actually entirely change the data binding language itself. So we built Aurelia as a set of modules that collaborate together to give you a framework. And our templating engine and our data binding engine are actually decoupled from our data binding syntax.
So
you can actually swap the syntax out. So let me show you this other extensibility demo.
Just to be clear, because I think we said this a little fast. What I had automatically assumed was that Aurelia had some binding stuff.
Yep.
And that when you were binding, you were always using that binding stuff, because if you say value.bind or, for example, whatever your src.bind, it's using Aurelia's libraries to do that. What you're saying is that you don't have to.
What I'm saying in this case is that .bind is our syntax for data binding, but that's decoupled from the mechanism for how binding actually does it, and it's decoupled from the templating engine itself. So you can swap out the syntax. So I'm going to show you one other demo. Let me make sure that I got this set up. Yeah, again, it looks the same as one of our other demos that we did, but let me show you the code for this. Again, I've got the same very simple component. And in the app HTML, though, look at the syntax.
Yeah, it looks knockout-ish.
Well, this is Angular.
That's right.
So notice how we have this pluggable resource pipeline. Well, simply by importing a special class that I wrote called Angular Syntax, I've now swapped out the data binding syntax for this component. So now you can see ng model. That's coming from Angular. That's how it does two-way data binding. And now you can see these double curly braces here, which is how they do that interpolation in tags. Now, this is not Angular. This is Aurelia. All I did was change the syntax to look like Angular.
I see.
Now, let me show you the name tag component, because this is going to take it up to the next level.
Sure.
Inside the name tag component,
you're using knockout.
I have knockout syntax, and so now you can see data-bind right there is using the knockout syntax. Again, this is actually Aurelia's data binding engine under the covers, but what I've done is I've swapped the syntax out on a per component basis. So what we have here,
and these are not even, it's like these things are not even living next to each other. Sometimes they're inside of each
other. Yes, because we have this root component using Angular that uses the name tag, and inside the name tag it's using knockout. Now I'm not saying that anyone should necessarily go do this, but this is really a demo that points out just how extensible and flexible it really is. You will not find a framework that can do anything like this.
Right. Well,
this is an example of one of many hooks that these resources can plug into. So you can change the template on the fly before it's compiled or after it's compiled. You can change the view before or after it's instantiated. You can plug in new syntax. You can do metaprogramming that generates custom elements. And on top of this, we still have this very simple POJO-type programming model for the components that you write. And even if you need to do more advanced things, but you want to maintain a POJO-type model, you can teach the framework conventions and put plugins in so that you can keep your app code very, very clean and simple, and then extend the framework, teaching it new tricks, as it were, to make your life easier as you develop features. Mm-hmm. And so all these things that I'm kind of showing are things that I think are unique to Aurelia that nothing else can do. And we really focus on letting you write very clean, pure, simple code, following very simple, easy to understand conventions, and then making the framework super extensible. I mean, we have people, integration is fantastic too. We actually have people doing using Polymer inside of Aurelia apps. We have people using React inside of Aurelia apps.
That's interesting.
So you can write your component so that your component sort of has two faces to it. The outside face looks like Aurelia, but the inside face
is
React.
React, right.
So we have people doing that successfully. They love it. And they get to use data binding too, because if they're using the element in an Aurelia view, they can have properties in data bind, and then internally it's just React re-rendering.
Right.
And we give them the hooks to know when those property changes so they can re-render and they're done. So we have the integration is really on multiple levels. Our binding engine, I already showed you how you can customize the syntax, but you can actually change the behavior, how it actually observes things. And we have a prototype plugin for Knockout that actually doesn't just change the syntax, but lets you use the Knockout library. And so you can have Knockout observables, and our binding engine will use those observables directly.
That's interesting.
So we have all these extensibility points, and it's not, they're not, they're providing any kind of performance hit because we add them. It's just by way of how we designed the framework to be very modular for our own sanity, to be honest. But the benefits of it are that there are all these different ways that you can integrate with these different libraries very easily or customize things, and all the while keeping your code very clean and simple. And you're just not going to see
you're
not going to see this anywhere else. So we're really excited. And this makes a huge difference as you learn a framework, as you build things, and as you evolve it over time, because in software development, the real expense comes after version one, and then you're gonna have to maintain and add new features, and so the cleaner the code is, the less framework intrusion there is, the easier it is for you to evolve your own code over time.
This is awesome. So where can people go to find out more? Obviously, Aurelia.io, of course, because it's JavaScript.
That's right.
That's awesome. And hopefully by the time this video comes out, there's going to be some new getting started tutorials and some docs. I particularly am impressed primarily because you really are trying to get out of the way. And when I see a class and that's all you need, the survivability of a class is way past anything that you'll ever make.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's what's really cool. Well, any parting words or anything you want to say to finish up?
Well, just thanks for having me, and I hope everyone that's listening has found this just informative and useful, and will come check it out. We're really excited about the community, what's going on, and would love to have all of you join us in building stuff and working with us to really evolve the web. And
awesome. So we'll put some links below so you can go see. I know even if you don't like it, I'm excited about it. Watching this, I got to learn a lot. Thanks for being with us, Rob.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for watching. Again, we're here in Las Vegas for Dev Intersection, and we will see you next time. Take care.